always in his office or any place I go to that required the mask at the time. So my complaint is basically when I walked in that office, I had a receptionist verbally attacking me, and that's not the first. I stepped out of the office into the outside environment, sat down on the bench, and proceeded to work off of my phone. I work off my phone and in my home and on my computer. I see her come out aggressively. I'm retired military. I'm very observant. I know what behavior is not. It came at the hospital to me, and came in my personal space, and she starts speaking her mouth a little aggressively, swinging her arms and hips, and I actually was on the phone working, and I told her I was working, please back up, you're in my personal space. She didn't respect that. She kept going. Then I had to tell her, please back up, you're in my personal space, or I'll have to call the cops. Like, back up. She said, go ahead. And she stormed back in the office. Don't understand why it was so hard to back up if she wanted to talk or say anything. But I stepped out of the office to get into a safe environment. It has nothing to do with a mask, ever. It was how she treated and approached me. That is the issue. So, reprimanding for abandoning a patient with my potentially life-threatening condition after I was let go from that office? Yeah. Are you kidding me? You're going to let me go back after 30 days into a more hostile environment? Nobody helped me find someone else for chelation. I had to drive 2 hours away to get it done. And then to find out that when I was researching this kind of practice of chelation, 15-20 minutes to put in my IV and have the chelation and walk out is not to be standard care. It was 2 to 3 hours. And they taught me what that meant. So I just didn't want this happening to any other patient. And what it caused me, the shock, the pain, the suffering, while I was sick, trying to look for some help. So where do I go next? Totally shocked me that I had to protect myself, said what I removed myself from the situation to get out of that environment, and she still came after me, and I still got myself into practice for protecting what I needed from me as a patient. Totally shocked me. Like I said, I'm in the healthcare field, retired military. I worked for colonels. And I'm glad this time is going to be over, so I can totally put this behind me.
Are you finished?
Pardon me?
Are you finished?
Yeah, I'd like a few things. Letter of apology. Maybe some refund of payments of chelation. That wasn't standard of care. I needed 60 treatments, and I was there for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe out the door. And I wasn't even getting what the standard of care was supposed to be. And I was there for other things, for neurofeedback. Spent a lot of money there. I'm through.
All right, Dr. Cochran. Can you
Please.
Yes.
For me?
A little bit. You're kind of choppy.
Starting better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay. Well, I'm really sorry that this whole thing happened because, the whole idea of my medical practice is, of course, was to help Donna Marie. And she was referred to me, and I saw her for the first time in November of 2020. So we're talking about at least a couple of years of care. So she was, you know, coming in here, and then we did have to do basically a map, a brain map that is an EEG, in order to find out what was going on with the brain itself. We found out several issues that were related to the brain trauma. And during the treatments, there were emotional issues always involved, you know, coming in and out because of the nature of the treatment itself. Now, one of the things that I need to mention is that with the mask itself, she didn't like to wear the mask. So that was a situation that we had to deal with from now on, and most of the time she would put it on and she will be okay with it. But, you know, from the beginning, she didn't want to wear the mask. She didn't believe in using the mask. But, you know, according to health standards, I had to basically apply that in my office. So it was important for me, for everybody to have it. And I really, you know, the goal here was to help her to improve. We also found in doing treatment and testing is that she was, she contained a lot of heavy metals, especially mercury. So we suggested for her to start doing chelation, and we do calcium PDTA that it can even be pushed, you know, can be done that way. I mean, I've been doing this for almost 40 years. So, I mean, you can do that. And in those days, 40 years ago, there was no calcium PDTA. We only had sodium PDTA. Sodium PDTA chelation does require, you know, 2 or 3 hours to be dripped in a large amount of fluid to be dissolved. But not with the calcium EDTA. And that's what she received. And we explained to her what that was. And so it wasn't, you know, the wrong treatment. It was just a different substance than what she's getting now, I guess. Anyway, I don't know if you have any other questions. We wrote a letter to her dismissing her. And the day that the situation happened, I was not at the office. So this was a situation that happened with my receptionist. And the letter from the receptionist you have that indicated that she was asking Donna Marie to put her mask on with signals because she was at the phone at that point. And she got upset about it and she left. And then she went outside to try to apologize and make sure that things were okay. And she accepted that. Yeah. So that's basically what we have, and you have everything in the records.
Dr. Cochran, did you send that letter? Do you recall, it's been a little bit of time, do you recall if you sent that certified?
Yes, it was certified.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like return receipt requested, or you just checked it via the internet?
Yeah, no, there was a receipt to request it, so we do have a copy of that.
So let me go through my board members. So, Dr. Popio.
Dr. Cochran, I understand what you're saying with regards to the chelation. I believe DM, like you said, is getting sodium EDTA. I definitely understand what you're saying, that the standard of care can be calcium EDTA, DMPS, et cetera. So, you know, I'd certainly agree that the standard of care with regards to her IV therapy was appropriate. You know, not as a result of this case, taking a look at your chart notes, you know, that's the one thing that came up to me in the records that was of significant concern, was being able to read your chart notes not following standard SOAP format. So to me, that was the biggest concern in this whole situation, was the chart notes, the ability for another physician to actually pick your notes up and have any idea of what you're doing. Legibility was a concern for me, you know, so I don't think that there was any standard of care issues. I guess, you know, hearing Dion's statement and your statement, you know, I don't understand. I think the only thing that makes sense, in my opinion, is that DM walked in without a mask and your staff was trying to signal to her to put it on. Otherwise, there would be no reason to, you know, verbally assault a patient walking in the door unless they were probably doing something that was not appropriate. So that would be that would be my take on kind of listening to both cases, reading everything, is that, you know, my biggest concern in this situation is the cut notes. I don't feel like any refund is necessary. There was no standard of care issue. The chelation treatment she was giving was totally appropriate.
Dr. Campbell.
My question right now is for DM. Can you hear me, ma'am?
Yes.
Thank you. If you can bring yourself back to the day that in question here. When you first arrived, you reached the door of the clinic, you opened the door up, and you entered into the facility. Do you remember seeing a staff member on the telephone, and that staff member signaling something to you? Do you remember anything like that?
Well, it was practice of care for Dr. Cochran for me to immediately, you know, walk in the door, and I go straight for the mask. That's what my behavior has always been. Like, you wake up in the morning, your feet hit the ground. I knew, and I did it legitimately every time I walked in there.
Right, well, I understand. Oftentimes when we walk in, we've got things in our hands, a lot of stuff going on, and sometimes we need to...
No, I do know, sir. I do. I understand, like, the possibility of things, but I do know my own behavior, and I do respect being retired military and working for colonels. I do what I'm at. Until I don't feel safe.
So when you first walked in the office, you don't remember the staff member signaling you?
She always did, sir. Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't have to look at her. I didn't have to see if she was sitting, standing on the phone, talking to a patient. They're usually there. I walk in and I grab a mask and I go outside.
Do you remember saying anything before you turned around and went back outside?
Do I remember about what I said to her?
Tell me more about
her. Oh, okay, sir. So when I walked in the door, right, I opened the doorknob and I walked straight to the mat. I've been going there for almost a year. I said, and she's been doing other things and I have it written down. I just never did. I have a trail of it, but this was enough. I was happy to leave. I told her that we've been here before. I know what to do. I grab my mask and I sit down. That's what I said. So when I walked out and she kept doing whatever she does ever since I've been in that practice, I know what to do to walk in the door.
Well, what caused you to feel the need to say that?
To say what? We've been here before?
Right, like you came in and but you didn't see any signal to you, but you just spontaneously made that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I could be walking around the corner and I had just like, you know, obviously this is a mask issue and we see what's going on in the world. So let me bring it back to the clinic of Dr. Cochran, and I respected his office. If I had to talk or take a sip, it was okay. But if I had to breathe as I'm having chelation, she would walk by and point her finger and you have to. Like, enough. I'm already not well.
All right. Before this day, you guys have had, you and this
yes,
and police director, you've had interactions regarding masks with this employee before
yes,
this
sir.
Day.
It's been constant. And so
okay.
I just remove myself. I reflect, you know, I problem solve. I'm a resolution person. I don't want to engage in hostilities. That's not who I. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, that's all the questions that I have for now. Thank you.
Okay.
I have no questions.
Okay.
No.
Dr. Spatz?
Yes, this is Dr. Spatz. Dr. Kaufman, so what was the reason that we decided to not to have service with Mr. DM? What was the main reason for that?
Well, the main reason was the situation that we were describing in the letter, that she wasn't really applying the mask requirement here as we needed it. And often, you know, like in the chelation room, she would take the mask because she said she needed to breathe. I can't breathe that, but I said we need to protect all the patients, so that we need the mask here. And the other thing that was a big problem for me is that she would miss a lot of the appointments. So we have a list that I sent to the board of all the missed appointments, and more than half of them were missed, so she wouldn't show up. And so that was one of the difficulties at the clinic, too.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. That's all the question I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
No.
Excuse me, DM. Ms. Gallen?
It just sounds like there is a long-standing issue, so it's hard to say exactly what happened on that specific day. But I'm inclined to think it's not really our place as a licensing board, to make that determination. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Okay. I read the case and I went through the discharge letter, and I think it looked to me as though Dr. Cochran followed protocol. So I'll make a motion and then I'll need discussion and or seconding of the motion. I'll make a motion for a dismissal on Dr. Cochran.
Okay.
This is Dr. Hopefield. I agree with dismissal of the case, but I feel like the chart notes are so inadequate that something needs to be said or a letter of concern with regards to those, because there's no vitals, there's illegible chart notes, in my opinion, kind of top to bottom on most every treatment or most every appointment.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Dr. Hopefield. It's fine that you write them, and it's fine that you're using that format. The problem is what we're looking for is vitals, like O2 sat, BPs, et cetera, et cetera. And when you have these encounters, so I have to agree with Dr. Popio on that. That writing's fine, however you want to do the note, but it just has to be a more in-depth type note. That's my opinion.
Yes, I do appreciate that. And I will talk to my staff, because some of it is from the nurse that is applying the IV here.
Dr. Popio, what was your thought? Were you thinking of letter of concern in the charting class, or what was your
I think a letter of concern for failure to keep adequate medical records, which, you know, maybe 8 hours of CME, something to that effect.
Okay. Reference to what Dr. Popic and I have discussed, what's your thought?
Yeah, I completely agree with Dr. Fabio on it. So 8 units, I think CME would be appropriate for the charting as well.
And Dr. Campbell?
I also concur. Over time, we all need a refresher. And so I'm sure that there are some benefits aside from this that can be picked up as well. So.
And then Ms. Tippett's going to roll back up to you, your thoughts.
I agree with Dr. Popio's take.
And Ms. Gallen?
I agree as well.
Okay. So
So,
I believe Dr.
Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chair, members. This is Justin. Just a couple of procedural points. So, one, the chair, I believe, had made a motion to dismiss. It sounds like we're leaning towards some sort of CME. So, first, the chair would need to rescind the motion to dismiss, and a new one would need to be made. With regard to the new motion, I had heard someone mention a letter of concern. And then also someone mentioned CME. I think you don't need to do a letter of concern you can issue a non-disciplinary order for CE or for CME, which, will itself describe, why the board is ordering, someone to take the charting course. So, a letter of concern probably would be necessary because that would already, anything you would put in the letter of concern would be in the non-disciplinary order for CE. So to the extent that's the board's intent, I would recommend making a motion to issue a non-disciplinary order to complete continuing education. I believe it's the 8-hour charting course that you've done before, and you would need to specify whether that needs to be whether that would be in addition to or the already required amount of CE.
Okay. So I made the motion. So basically, let's go ahead and do this. I'll rescind the dismissal, and then we'll do, and I'll need the board's permission to, but we'll go ahead and do a non-disciplinary order for 80 hours of continuing medical education. Specifically charting, and I think we could utilize this, Dr. Popia and Dr. Campbell and Dr. Spatz as part of his 30 hours. I don't think he needs to do additional to the hours he already has to do according to state regulation. So that's the motion I have. I rescind it to the
Dr. Popia, I'll second that motion.
And Dr. Popia, is that okay if he does the 8 hours as part of his 30?
Yeah, no problem. Okay.
Dr. Campbell and Spatz, let me start with you, Dr. Campbell.
I concur.
Dr. Spatz?
I agree.
Okay. And Ms. Tippett and Ms. Gallen, any
suggestions? I agree.
And then, Gail, can we do official roll call on?
Yes, Dr. Sadlick, members of the board. Just one issue. How long does the physician have to complete the CE?
6 months would be fine.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll do roll call, please. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Let's go ahead and move on. Go ahead on to case number 22-224. And that is Dr.
I'm sorry. This is still abandoned patient Dana Rimato. I don't know if I could get off and have one last comment and you're done with me. I just never heard anybody sign me off or tell me anything to bring me any kind of resolution.
We're done with the case.
Okay, great. I just want to state, basically, abandonment occurred whether there was a mask issue or not. He didn't offer me alternative care, but thank you all for at least listening, and I appreciate you all being out there serving others in their health and wellness. Bye.
All right. Gail, can you give us the case number 22-224?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on 6-16-2022, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from BBJ, who alleges respondent abandoned her. According to BBJ, she had been a patient of respondents for approximately a year while respondent was employed at West Valley Naturopath, the office of Dr. Brian Archambault. On May 20th, 2022, she contacted the clinic to schedule a follow-up appointment with respondent and was informed by the clinic staff that respondent had no longer with the office. At some point during care, respondent had provided BBJ with her cell phone number, so she reached out to respondent via text message. While BBJ did make contact with respondent, there seemed to be some disconnect between the two when BBJ attempted to get respondent's contact information to set up an appointment, as respondent never returned the text with the required information. BBJ's medical records were subpoenaed from West Valley Naturopathic. Records show respondent treated BBJ from 2-9-2021 to 3-25-2022. On 3-9-2022, respondent referred the patient for a CT scan and treatment relating to abdominal pain. On 3-25-2022, respondent had a phone consult with BBJ, and she notes that the patient likes the idea of finding a GI specialist who could do surgery if needed. She will contact insurance company for a list of network providers. The patient, she is relieved to know that she is going on and happy will have a plan to address. According to respondent, the morning of April 4th, she unexpectedly left West Valley Naturopathic Center. Per the terms of her contract, all patients belonged to the clinic and were not her personal patients. She was prohibited from initiating contact with any of her former patients. She states there was a gap in time between the time she last saw the patient and the time she left the clinic, and she had referred the patient to a GI specialist and wrote a referral letter requesting full diagnosis and treatment.
Is the complaint on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we'll have you start first, and then we'll hear from the doctor.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. I just want to start by saying this makes me very sad, as I had incredible trust and respect for Dr. Bianca. It is my belief that everyone does have the right to pursue personal and professional goals in their life. Dr. Bianca, however, did not seem to consider my emotional state when departing West Valley without communication to me. She was aware and had treated my depression and was aware that I have struggled with suicidal ideation this past year. I would have greatly appreciated a simple phone call conversation with, being provided an appropriate recommendation for my proper transfer of care, especially since I was in the middle of testing. I wanted to mention that when Dr. Bianca sent me for the CT scans, it took me almost 3 months because Simon Med kept losing my appointments. So I went through all of that, and then when I called the office to make an appointment to further discuss, this is how I found out that Dr. Bianca had left the West Valley. And so it's also my opinion that Dr. Bianca didn't reach out to me until the very day she learned that I may pursue this very complaint. I had texted her on May 20th, and on June 14th, when I called West Valley and I spoke to Savannah, and I mentioned to her I was very upset because I hadn't heard anything from Dr. Bianca before she left, telling me, hey, when you come back from working with a specialist, whatever happens, hey, this is who I'm going to recommend you to continue care, which, by the way, I'm leaving. It was devastating to me. I don't have a big support system, and Dr. Bianca was the one professional I felt I could count on. I felt very sad, and yes, I did feel abandoned. By that point, because I had lost all trust when she told me on June 14th, she offered me free medical care, Reiki and acupuncture. At that point, again, I had lost all trust in Dr. Bianca, unfortunately, and that is why I mentioned to her that after careful consideration, I would just move on with a different doctor. Again, I just felt that during the year that I worked with her, I thought we had great communication, and I was devastated that she left her practice. But I was hopeful because I thought I was going to be able to transfer to her new practice. But again, that just didn't happen.
Did you receive a dismissal letter from her?
No. The way I found out was one day when I called West Valley. I said, hey, I want to make an appointment with Dr. Bianca. I got my CT scan finished. They said, oh, and literally I'm quoting, they said, oh, I guess you haven't read our newsletter, that they send out newsletters every like once a month or something. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, no, Dr. Bianca is no longer with us. She's left on sabbatical. That is how I found out.
And have you received care since?
No, I unfortunately I have felt very very in limbo. Obviously I know the importance of getting in what happened for the longest of time, I felt in limbo, not really sure of what to do. I don't know any of the doctors at this clinic. I didn't feel comfortable just starting with, to begin with, my understanding in this conversation with West Valley is that I was going to stay with Dr. Archenball, I think is his name. And I don't know him from Adam. I don't know anything about him. I don't know even if that would have been the best doctor to continue care for me. So I've been in limbo. I finally took steps probably 2 weeks ago, and I decided to return to traditional Western medicine, and I reconnected with my insurance, and I sought to start all over with a regular practitioner. So as of a couple weeks ago, I'm finally under care again.
And when you wrote the complaint, what was your goal?
My goal was to, you know, I knew that Dr. Bianca would be present, but for future reference, I think that doctors should consider the patient's emotional state. Again, I had developed great, incredible trust, and she was the one person that I felt professionally that I could count on. And if she was leaving, then a phone call to me would have been best practice. So I wanted her to know how she affected me emotionally. And to this day, I don't really understand how she left so abruptly without even a phone call. Hey, here's the doctor I recommend for you.
Okay, and you've now found an insurance provider?
Yes, as of a couple weeks ago.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Spadas, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Could you enlighten us?
Yes, thank you. And I would just like to provide some additional details. So my formal statement that I submitted to the board goes over my whole experience with this matter and my thoughts and feelings. So I feel like that's already detailed, but I would just like to address you know, what the complainant said. So I also sent my contract, my former contract, along with my reply, and I highlighted, well, wrote in my reply the section. So that contract was extremely prohibitive. Even to this day, if I am to make contact with anyone who is my patient, the owner can sue me for $300,000. It was not that I did not want to contact my patients. To this day, it breaks my heart that I never got to say goodbye to them. It was nothing that I wanted. If I had been legally allowed to let my patients know that I left, I would have contacted every single person to let them know. I could not contact BBJ. You guys have the contract stating that. It breaks my heart that I couldn't do that either. My hands were tied. I wish I could. It was not a planned exit. I had no idea that I was going to be leaving until that morning. So it wasn't like anything I was planning. There was no way that I could have told her, hey, when you get back, you're going to see this doctor. I thought that I would be the doctor that she saw forever. We did have an incredibly close relationship. That's why this entire situation is extremely sad to me. So, and I know I don't want to take up too much of your time, but what happened from my end, my perspective, I received her message when I was camping. I was so happy to hear from her because I couldn't reach out. My text even said that. So we texted a few times back and forth, and the last text she had to me was how does she make the appointment or how does she schedule with me? So I had typed out for her to call me whenever she was ready. I did not know that didn't send. So the entire time, I truly believed that I was waiting to hear from her. What happened was, after that weekend, I had a ton of very difficult changes in my personal life, and I did not look at my phone. All I did was go to work, deal with my kids. I was in a very, very bad place myself. The day that I called her, I had a conversation with my parents because they were very worried about me. And they told me, honey, you have to start fighting for your life again. You have to get back to you. And so what I decided to start with was to go through all the texts that I have not answered from family and friends who have been concerned about me. And when I got to the bottom of those messages, that's when I realized that it said saved as draft and not sent. So I immediately called her to let her know what happened. I had no idea that she had even contacted West Valley until she told me that on the phone. I had no idea that she had called them that day. I had no idea that she spoke to Savannah. She didn't mention anything to me at all about thinking to file a complaint. The first time I ever heard the word complaint was when I got the message from Gil saying that a complaint had been made against me. And just to clarify, I have nothing, and I want absolutely, positively nothing to do with West Valley Naturopathic Center again for the rest of my life. To get the records for this complaint, I actually asked Gail to request them because I didn't even want to contact them. I had no idea she spoke with Savannah. The reason that I called her that day was because that's the day the text didn't send. This patient was in my heart. I have so much love for her. I felt awful that she didn't get my reply, and I let her know the changes in my personal life. I never discussed that with patients, but I wanted her to understand why I hadn't seen that the text sent. When we spoke that day, I told her how sorry I was that I ever caused her pain. I have love for her to this day. I never wanted her to hurt. It broke my heart that that happened, and I told her I've never been involved in a situation like a patient with this before with a patient. And so I told her, me not sending that reply did break our trust, and I let her know she didn't even have to talk with me. I just wanted to let her know why. And then as we started talking, she let me know about what happened when she saw the GI specialist. You know, she let me know. All she said was she had called West Valley, and I told her, good, that is what you should have done when you didn't hear from me. I'm glad you did. And at that time, I told her this was not intentional. It was a miscommunication. I let her know that by no means did she ever have to talk with me, but that if she wanted to maintain care, I would treat her for free to try to accommodate this horrible miscommunication. that if she wanted to see anyone at West Valley, that she was fully supported in doing that, and that after this experience, if it had broken her trust with my former office, that she could even find a different new position not related to this. When we had that conversation, she was not at that time that she wanted to stay with me. I understand why she didn't want you anymore. I did break the trust, and I let her know that. I specifically said, you can tell me to go kick rocks. I just want to make sure that we're okay. And so what had happened was, you know, we started talking about the GI condition. She let me know she had seen the specialist. She said he didn't think it was anything to worry about. She wasn't having the type of pain she was when, and not as frequently as when we first did the CT, and that she really wasn't worried about it anymore, that she, there was a few other things she wanted to treat, weight loss and mental health. And I let her know there was a lot of things we had never touched on with that, including but not limited to acupuncture and Reiki, because my schedule was so busy over there, we just never really got to it. I let her know that I would treat her for free. I could treat her anywhere she wanted, and that she didn't have to see me at all, because I understand that that did make her feel like I broke the trust. I let her know that it was not intentional, that I would never do that to her, and that I was just here to support her. We got off the phone that day with basically saying, hey, check your schedule. You know, let me know whenever. I told her I will accommodate you any Friday or Saturday or Sunday, that I may be going out of town that next weekend. But other than that, I would drop everything I was doing to try to make this up to her. I felt horrible. I did not sleep that night. I shed tears that night, that this communication hurt her that way. So the next morning, the reason that I sent her that text is because I wanted to help heal that, and I felt so awful that I caused her any pain. When I got the response that, you know, she had considered it carefully and wanted to see a physician, I responded totally understandable, because it was totally understandable. Even though it made me very sad, it was a miscommunication, and I truly, when I read that text, I thought, okay, I hope she finds someone that can help her, and that was what I believed to be the end of the situation until I received the email from Gail discussing the complaint.
Okay. I have a couple quick questions.
Sure.
Who's the office manager or owner of West Valley? Is that Brian Archibald?
Yep. Archibald, yes.
Okay. And if you need a patient record, what's the protocol that they utilize?
So, like, if I was to need one now from a previous patient of mine?
Correct.
You know what? Honestly, I don't even know, because I have not been in that situation. Typically, in every other practice I've ever left, I've left on excellent terms. I can give you all those owners' names. So in the past, I would just reach out, hey, can I have that chart? I will never contact that office. I will never have anything to do with them ever again. So if I ever find myself in that situation, I'm not really sure, honestly, what I would do.
And currently, where are you practicing?
So right now I'm working at a clinic called True Health Medical out in Mesa.
And what do you currently do? Are you doing
Sure.
general care, family care?
This is actually a pain clinic, so I'm mostly doing acupuncture for them as well as some nutritional consults.
And if you happen to leave there, you have the same type of agreement?
No. Oh, no. I will never sign a contract like that again in my life, and I learned to never sign a contract under duress. So all I have here now is an offer letter. It's related. I just want to provide some clarification. Again, it was not my plan to leave West Valley. There was a situation that had happened on that Friday. There was a communication between myself and the owner. I had texted him that Friday. 24 hours later, he responded. That response made it extremely clear to me that that was not the place for me to ever be again. However, I still was under contract with them. I left in April, and the contract technically ended August 31st. So it got to the point that I thought, you know what? This is such a toxic, unhealthy environment. While I would never break a contract, I can't be here anymore. So I went in Monday morning, packed my things, gave my notice, and left. If you would have asked me Thursday, would I ever do that? I would have told you no. I have never left a job like that. Like I said, I have excellent rapport with every clinic I've ever worked at, and I'm happy to provide you those owner and those office managers' numbers to verify that. This was a very, very unique situation that for me as a woman and a person, I had to get away from.
And did you give his clinic a, how long did you finish, was it 2 weeks until you left?
No, I left that morning. I left that morning. So what I did was provide three different referrals that patients could move to. One of them was a school, one of them was a professor through the school, and one of them was just another physician I knew in the area. Like I said, since it wasn't planned, I left them those three names and a forwarding address, so that way if they had any issues, they, you know, they could contact me if they needed me.
Did you leave that with the clinic owner, or did you email to your patient?
I am prohibited from reaching out to patients. I cannot call them, I cannot email them, I cannot text them. When I put in my resignation, I did it with the office manager, and that's who I left that with.
Okay. So you didn't necessarily provide West Valley with a 30-day
letter? No, I broke my...
Okay. I mean, a 30-day letter that he couldn't have. Probably could have sent to your patient, saying that you're no longer attending to their care, et cetera.
True, and it was not ideal. Like I said, I've never left a clinic like that before, but at that point it was nothing that I could maintain for many different reasons. So yes, every other clinic I've ever worked at has been at least a 2-week notice, if not a 30-day. Every other clinic I've, you know, spoken with patients directly or wrote a general letter or did something. Since this was an emergent situation, that's not how it happened. And had my contract not be so prohibitive, I would have absolutely contacted every patient individually. But I'm legally prohibited from doing that. That is the only reason I didn't.
Okay. All right. So right now you're at True Health and you're pretty much
mm-hmm.
with pain patients through natural modalities.
Yes.
All right. Let me go ahead and move on to my board members. Dr. Popio.
Yeah, Dr. Bianca, I understand what you're saying with regards to the legalities, et cetera. It sounds like based on the contract, you were put kind of in a tough situation as far as being able to follow up with patients. So I guess I don't really have much else to ask about at this point. I feel like I'm pretty clear as to her hands were tied with regards to being able to follow up appropriately. And you know, I don't really have any other questions, et cetera.
Dr. Spatz.
I don't have any other questions. Everything has been said already. I don't have anything to say as well. And I think that Dr. Bianca was put on a difficult situation. So I don't think my recommendation would be dismiss this case.
Okay. Ms. Tippett?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Ms. Gallen?
I don't have any questions either.
Okay. Let me get Dr. Campbell's viewpoint.
Yes, I mean, obviously, it's probably a very difficult situation. I've actually had this happen to me as a patient. We never know what's happening on the back end. You know, as we've heard both sides, it becomes abundantly clear what took place. It is a very difficult situation to be in as a patient. And of course, we also have to consider the doctor's reality in this as well. And so ultimately I would agree that we would need to dismiss the case. I think that it's a sad situation that the clinic put the physician in this, knowing retiring or leaving or transferring or quitting or whatever. And naturally, the clinic owner in this situation appears that, self-motivated in that if you allow your physicians to pick up the phone and call the patients who rely on them, naturally the patient's going to want to leave, and that is a financial, loss to the clinic. But of course the patient suffers and that's a terrible situation. Hopefully listening to each other, has been, somewhat helpful to our complaints. That's all I have to say.
What you may want to do, hopefully this never happens again, because it's stressful for you as a clinician and awful for your patient. There's that 30-day, and I understand you had no way to get access to giving that to the patient. Perhaps West Valley would have done it. Perhaps they wouldn't have, but I'm going to make a motion to go ahead and all board members have kind of given us their feedback. So I'm going to ask Ms. Anthony to go ahead and do roll call.
This is Dr. Popiel. I second that motion.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Popiel. And Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Move on to 5C of the CAT. And this is case number 22-226. And Dr. Shine, initial interview. Do we have Dr. Shine on the phone?
Present.
Okay. And I'll have Ms. Anthony give us a quick overview.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on July 28, 2022, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a notice from the Arizona Department of Health Services outlining an apparent discrepancy between the number of medical marijuana certifications issued by respondent between January 1, 2022 and June 30, 2022, and the number of CSPMP database queries respondent performed during that time frame. According to the notice, respondent certified 273 patients for medical marijuana during that time frame and queried the database zero times. It is noted that the complaint originated from the Arizona Department of Health Services and was submitted to the Arizona Medical Board in error. The medical board did forward the complaint to us. By her own admission, respondent certified 273 patients between February and March of 2021 and failed to meet the requirements for medical marijuana certification as outlined in the naturopathic statute. Respondent certified patients via a phone interview. Respondent never saw the patient, never performed a physical exam on the patients, never reviewed prior medical records, and did not perform the required CSPMP queries prior to certification. Although respondent admits to not performing the required steps, she signed and initialed each certification form, attesting she had actually completed all the requirements. Additionally, respondent failed to keep adequate medical records. Respondent also failed to respond to the board in a timely manner. After receipt of this complaint, respondent performed a search of the CSPMP for her patients. She only provided the completion of the search status. She did not include any of the results.
Dr. Shine?
Yes.
What's your feedback? What's your opinion? I've read your response back to the executive director.
Yes. So I took this position, all I can do is be as transparent about this as I can. I took this position, it was my first time doing medical marijuana certifications, still during the pandemic, where most of the companies that were hiring for this
were doing them via telemedicine. I know we had been seeing a lot of patients being via telemedicine because of the pandemic, and still having cases now. I no longer see patients at that clinic. When I was initially hired, from my understanding, you know, when we're seeing a patient, the telemedicine would suffice. What I would do with each patient, they come into the office initially. I put all of this in the letter that I did send ahead to Ms. Anthony, but I just wanted you all to hear it, at least from my end, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this was a huge learning curve for me where I clearly did not grasp the full understanding of how it works. But on my end, as far as interviewing the patients and going through their list of concerns and, you know, giving a pretty thorough interview, each of those interviews would last quite a while, and all the patients were only pain patients. I did not agree to see any other type of patients, right? There could be some that were coming for cancer or some coming for insomnia or whatever there were, but I would only see the pain patients. And with that, from how I was informed, with pain being a subjective item and with the opioid crisis, most of these patients, when I interviewed them, they had seen another physician, been under the care of a physician. Some of these were past injuries. Some of them were pretty severe injuries. And they were using medical marijuana to help curtail the pain and whatever the symptoms went along with it. And from, you know, I would give as thorough interview as I can. I wrote a lot of those notes in order for me to keep track of what their symptoms were. I would have the patient wait on the phone with me while I would go through, find all the ICD-10 codes to match exactly what their condition was so the Department of Health could have a good understanding. Because they only require you to send in the form for the approval, that was all that I sent in. Now, on the end of not doing the PMP, I will accept responsibility for that, which is why I went ahead and entered those in. I've been seeing patients there for a total of about 4 months, and I did not enter them into the database. The job that I had before that, which has almost been 2 years now, I have a lapse in working with a heavy load of patients because I had gotten COVID myself. I didn't include any of this in the letter, but I did speak with Ms. Gail about this, that almost passed away in the hospital at the VA from COVID. And because I had long haulers and had 2 hospital visits and in and out of the doctor's office, it had been a while since I was able to really see patients. So this was kind of my way of getting back into seeing patients regularly and routinely. And at my former job, whenever we do anything where we have to prescribe, whether it's a controlled substance, and we were actually dispensing medications from that office, we had delegates in the front office. Excuse me. They always put in our PMP. So I haven't done the PMP in so long. And because all of the patients get processed through the front office, they collect their payments. They see them first. They get their ID. They make the verification. They fill out their applications with the front desk. I also assumed that the PMP was being done with them. And I didn't go any further to pursue that. And now, since the complaint was filed and I had a chance to speak with Ms. Gail, I have definitely had time to sit and kind of think about where that went wrong and how to make sure that this never happens again. I'm predominantly teaching right now, and I do have patients on a shift, but they're with resident and student rotations, where I am very adamant about, it's predominantly IVs at this point, so I'm very adamant about the, you know, paperwork and charting and all of those things. I have been in medicine for a very long time outside of being a naturopathic doctor. It is like this time I really dropped the ball and were not aware that I would have to see the patient if I gave a complete interview, especially with pain, with it being suggestion, and with the push to try to get people off opioids. The other thing to address, she asked me a question in the email that I assume you all have seen corresponded between the two of us about having the patient. Sorry, I'm trying to remember how it, the question was posed. Excuse me, I'm sorry, give me just 1 second to look at it here. But with the patient presentation, I would, she asked about being able to dismiss any cases, I guess. Were there any cases that I sent that were denied? If I had patients that I thought something was either A, off or suspicious, or the questions, they couldn't answer the questions to verify themselves, these things, I would automatically send, I reject those applications up front and send them to the office. I didn't feel the need to send that rejection to DHS, which again, I don't send approvals or rejections. After I get those complete, everything is scanned and sent to the main office and they forward those approvals to the DHS, I then will, you know, after some time goes by, then I get X amount of patients and I clear out the initial ones because we didn't have to send the chart or they didn't request the PMP for any of these patients. So had I been made aware, I would have definitely rectified these things long before, but I had never heard from anything from anyone until I got this complaint. But as far as denying patients, if something didn't look right, if I couldn't make out, you know, their previous application, if something didn't match with the new application, since a lot of these were renewals from chronic pain patients, then I would go ahead and send it back to the office. They'll contact the patient because it could have been anything like verifying the address, the date of birth. If anything didn't match up, they contact the patient. And if it's rectified, it either goes to another doctor that works there or it may come back to me, or the patient would just be denied and all of those things will be handled in office because I just work for them. It's not my company and I don't see what happens with the backstory after those things are sent back unless the patient comes back to me with, you know, with the information restored. So as far as learning how to as far as just taking ownership on, yes, I signed the form. It was pain patients according to the state. If it's a pain patient, they do not have to present with medical records. They have to present with medical records if it was a different case outside of pain. Those were the instructions. That's how I carried it out. And like I said, I no longer work there, but if I ever wanted to do this again, I know, I feel like on my end, going the extra mile after speaking to another doctor there, like, yeah, I just print out my PMP and send it with them, whether they want it or not. And I just didn't think to do that, and I'm just now finding out about it. But had I been called on it early, there's no way I would continue to have gone down that path. From what I understand, there have been other doctors that will put the codes on there and send the application, and that's all that's required. I think I got dinged because it didn't match up with the PMP, and that was on my end, assuming that those things were also being done at the front desk. when I put all the patients in, which I elected to do that, I discussed with Gail, I said, I'll go ahead and enter them all in now since we're still, you know, within that. It hasn't been 6 months or anything. I entered them all in. I had a chance to review the ones that were flagged. Those patients are under the care of doctors and had other prescriptions out for whatever other conditions they had. Some of them were pain and some of them were outside of the pain. And one thing that I made sure I did for everyone I spoke with was, you know, ask when the last time they saw a doctor and if any other conditions were present, were they on any other medications? How did the medical marijuana serve them? What are the symptoms that it helped curtail for them or alleviate their pain? And if they hadn't seen a doctor in a while or wasn't sure who to see, I would also recommend local doctors in the area. And I've sat on the phone with patients while I've looked up their specific concerns to see who would be the best suited to see. I don't know a lot of doctors here, so of course I refer them to the doctors that I have met or have heard great reviews for, especially in terms of pain management. I've also recommended they go to SCNM, and I gave them the name of Dr. Trahan, who everyone raves about. So I also told them that if they ever needed anything in addition, that my business cell would be left with, you know, the front desk. If they wanted further referrals or if those referrals didn't work out, that they could contact me and I'll make sure to get them to who they would go to. So on my end, I thought I was being as thorough as I can be as far as getting people certified who weren't able to come out or who lived a distance from the shop, being able to service them so that they could still get their card before it expires so they can continue with their care.
Okay.
And
so,
that's the majority of what I have to say.
Let me digress here for a quick couple moments. Mm-hmm. The telemed, was that via telephone or did you actually see the patient on a computer screen?
That was over the phone is how they have the setup. And I did ask, you know, which is why I went through more investigation and asking the question to verify. I would have a copy of their applications, ID, whether they had a former application and things like that to help verify who they were, and they would go into details about their story that would line up. I asked the company. They said they've been doing this, I guess, since the pandemic, but the company itself had been open for a while and had a pretty good reputation. So I guess that's on my end again for just blindly trusting that it was okay. I assume with the pandemic that these things were allowed. Now, if I see a patient, yes, I use video, but they don't have that set up. So either they'll come in when the office is open, you know, prior to the pandemic. I don't know what they've changed since, as I haven't seen a patient there in a couple of months.
Okay. So basically, these were phone calls that you did, and then you assumed that where you were working, that they were doing PMPs for you, didn't look at the PMP. And the problem is that you had 270 some odd certifications, and you signed a form stating that you had seen them interacted, et cetera, and you hadn't. So that's why the executive director has opened this complaint. So those are kind of the facts that we have to deal with today. So I'm going to ask my other board members to get their opinion also. But the problem you kind of ran into is there's a, on that form that you signed or initialed, there's a protocol that you have to follow. You just can't not do the protocol, despite what the organization you work with, you know, told you. So I'm going to ask Dr. Popia what his thoughts are.
Dr. Schein, on the PMT report, so, yeah, I understand what you're saying, that you assumed the staff was doing them. But I guess my concern is that even if the staff was doing them, would you rely on the staff to make the determination of, oh, there's something concerning on this PMP report? So that's my concern is, yeah, I get that, you know, you thought the staff was doing it, but it should have become clear, like, within one or two patients, like, oh, I'm not seeing the PMP. So I guess my concern would be is that either you're relying on the staff to have medical knowledge to determine if something on the PMP report is concerning, you know, or just turning a blind eye to it. So why were you of the opinion that you could, even if the staff should have been doing the PMP reports, that you didn't need to see the PMP?
Well, the thing about this overall, because it is medical marijuana, and it's also legal in this state, the only experience I've had prior to with, let's say, a patient gets flagged for something, and then they'll bring it over to me. Like, if they see a flag or if whatever may come up, that person would then bring it to me. But that's if we're also seeing that, for instance, years ago at Greyhawk, I had a patient that wanted to get opioids for sprained ankle. If it showed that she already had that prescription open from another doc for the same prescription, where it became questionable, then they bring it to me. I honestly, and I mean this 100%, I honestly did not think it was a problem, because when these patients get ready to expire, like let's say they wanted to do it a month before, then it would show that they already had a card and that it's coming up for expiration. I hadn't seen, or it hadn't been brought to my attention, that this same name is coming up and they're just going from dispensary to dispensary to dispensary getting the marijuana card certified under their name. So I wouldn't have been flagged, because they're only getting the one card for themselves. I would think it would be something that would be more of an issue if it's the same patient going around getting cards, as if they were going to sell them or give them to family members to use or something of that nature. So for some that I saw when I put them in that were flagged, none of those were for marijuana at all. And I guess, again, that's just me looking at abuse of this particular system. So all I see is that they've had a card already, and that card is near or past expiration. So it'll be just that one patient that one time getting their card, which is now good instead of for 1 year, for 2 years. And so some of these people hadn't been seen or renewing a card for 2 years since they changed that right before or right at the beginning of the pandemic. So I wouldn't have been alerted unless someone's like, hey, their name is coming up because they've gotten multiple cards or they're seeing multiple doctors trying to get another card.
Okay. Well, from my perspective, you're checking the PMP for everything other than marijuana. You know, yeah, I guess some of those situations could come up where you're like, oh, they're already recertified, but that's for the state to catch, I guess. So my understanding of the PMP checks is for drug-seeking behavior, clinical history of opioids, benzos, pain meds, sleep aids, things like that, things that would make you concerned about drug-seeking behavior. And given that you decided that you were only going to see pain patients, to me it would have made logical sense to say, is this patient concerning from a standpoint of all of the other medications that they may be on? And, you know, because you never saw the PMP, you wouldn't know, are they on 17 different drugs at this point? And that should alert me to the idea that this is somebody that I need to question more. So I definitely am worried about your judgment on the PMP as far as, you know, not just, hey, somebody else should have been checking it, but the fact that you're specifically limiting yourself to pain patients and not seeing any of the pain medications that that person may be on. And it may be, I may be wrong with regards to this idea that you've got that pain patients didn't require, you know, some sort of, what shall I say, some sort of, you know, medical history or other chart notes. But historically, that would be kind of more so to me the red flag population that this person could be drug sneaking. This could be somebody who's more concerning. And do they actually have a documented history of seeking an X-ray or an MRI for the knee pain that they've got or the low back pain, et cetera? Do we actually have any sort of legitimacy to the fact that they're in pain? Because, I mean, anybody can say, come to you and say they're in pain. So if you have, if they've never sought treatment for it, they have no other records documenting that they're in pain and seeing somebody for it, that would be, again, to me, another huge red flag that we haven't seen that. And I guess my last question for you would be, why were you under the assumption that you didn't actually have to do a chart note for any of these patients?
So I would document, so I have the forms like in front of me while I'm talking to the patient, and I'll write out, again, writing, and I did not type these, especially with the form having to need hand signature. So I would write everything out that I needed in order to make the call on, yes, we're going to do this for these reasons, and take the list of complaints or whatever they said they had, to then use that to find the ICD-10 code. And I would scan the patient's paperwork in and send that over to the office. But because they didn't need to upload anything other than what's going, you know, the approval to the state, then after some time, because I didn't expect to see these patients again, then after some time, I would just clear through those processes after I've sent an upload and that everything went through, because I would keep it for X amount of time, because if the state had questions, they have sent an application back, which was, you know, again, I thought if I was doing something really wrong, then they would let me know. The state has sent some of those patient forms back to me, and I'll say, hey, we actually want to know this, or we want to see that. And because I would keep it until that time, once they get approved and it's resolved, then I just, that was it. Like, I sent it, and then those files were all clear. So I would keep it for X amount of time just to see if the state needed anything else. They never sent anything back saying, hey, we're concerned, this patient has a list of drugs. So that was some of the complaints of the patients. I want to go back to the PMP and how this connected to this whole thing as well. As those are the questions I would ask patients. And for so many of them, that was their chief thing. They did not want to be on drugs. They didn't want to take anything. Like I said, if I thought something sounded odd, I would just say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, I would send it back if I need to. But the patients that I've spoken with, that was their main thing, to not be on it. And I, again, looking at medical marijuana, and I want to be clear on what I'm saying, because I really don't want to feel like I'm disregarding this state, its laws, and the where we're standing with medical marijuana or marijuana as a whole. With it being legal in this state, if a patient is drug seeking, they can also just go get it and, you know, purchase whatever they want. I've even asked them how are they using it, and gave them you know, warnings on certain things with edibles, on strengths and doses, just being very careful. And a lot of these people that I spoke with were working people who had jobs and can't just be high all day. It didn't feel like that. Like it was a, I'm seeking a high, drug seeking type of behavior. If there's something I think sounds odd, I would for sure dive into more questions on that. But And for those reasons, again, it just never tipped me off, because if the state had questions, they would always send it back to us, and then I would answer those questions, and then it would be resolved and then approved. So it was always an extra step in between there.
I understand that I understand you wanting to do everything right to be able to answer questions from the state, but the Department of Health Services wouldn't be looking through the PMP for the patients typically, because they're relying on you, the physician, who's attesting to, I have looked at the PMP. They wouldn't do the job twice. They're going to be looking at you as a physician saying, I assume you've done your due diligence by looking at the PMP, doing a physical exam, and actually doing a chart note on the patient. So I'm not going to require you to, quote unquote, question what you're doing. Just, they're just looking at, did you fill out the form and send it in? So I guess, they're not going to do your job for you. But if you, they're assuming that because you've checked off the box, that you've done your job. So I don't really have
another question. Yeah, but the boxes don't specify that.
The box says I have checked the PMP. I personally attest that I have checked the PMP. That's what the box says.
Okay.
So
let me pull up the form. I'm sorry, I didn't have that prepared, and I don't have my
computer. That's all right. The box, we've been through this many, many times, unfortunately, on the board. So there's a box on there that says I have attest that I have checked the patient's PMP. So you don't need to find it. If you want to go look at it on your own, that's fine. But I guess big picture here, I don't understand why there's no chart note. I don't understand why you haven't looked at any PMP. I don't understand with pain patients why the assumption is that that reduces the amount of backlogging or backtracking on this patient's medical history. So I guess my bigger picture is just concern over the judgment calls on all steps of this. So I'll defer to the other board members to ask more questions.
Dr. Spack, can I move down to you and then move through my list that way?
Dr. Shai, on the form, on the on the MMJ certification form, line number 4 actually states that you have to actually look at the PMP yourself. And so when you initial that, like what Dr. Foster was saying, is that the Department of Public Health, they rely on you as a physician to check those. And so I agree with Dr. Foster on that, and it's a concern for me too, especially when you certify more than 200 patients without really, without looking back and see have any of your staff member have checked the PMP or not, then that for me is a question mark, big question mark for me regarding to that issue. Because more than 200 patients, that is a lot. On it. And then on the other hand, on the other additional information that Dr. Buffett was asking, and my concern also as well, when you reply back to Bill, one of the statements you make on email was no record review or reply for pain patients. But when you do the telemedicine, is there a Zoom meeting? How do you do it? I mean, do you just a phone call like what we're doing at the moment? I just want to get an idea of how.
That's what I answered, that it was a phone call, so that the patients usually either come to the office, call or apply, and then once the front desk reviews everything, then they dispense them out to doctors. The reason, and I will say this, I think part of the issue here is the number of certifications within that period. For me, it didn't sound abnormal because they're doing people all, in the greater Phoenix, Scottsdale, Maricopa County, wherever. But the other part to that, excuse me one second, let me turn this up. So the other part to that is when I was brought in, I was told that they may have a flood of people coming in at this particular time, which is why they were hiring for this particular, you know, from February till now. Of course, there's a huge slowdown to the summer. So it sounded like this is their regular cycle. But also the thing was, what I mentioned earlier, was that because the state had pushed the certification to 2 years, this would be the time that a number of those people who were certified were coming up on expiration or maybe already certified, already expired. So they knew they were expecting a lot of patients to come in at this time because it would have been around when it's time they expire and then slowing down over the summer and probably picking up again late December once that next wave of people would expire. So it didn't seem, the volume didn't seem abnormal to me because some days would be heavy and then other days I may just see like four patients. And
I understand that. Question is, my concern is, do you actually do any exam on any of this patient that you certify?
I didn't hear the question. Do I do?
Do you do any examination on any of this patient that you certify?
No, that's what I mentioned in the email, the letter, and over the phone earlier. Everything is over the phone. And what I would do was just take care to interview them and ask them all the questions pertaining to that particular, whatever caused the pain, right? Some were injuries, some were car accidents. There were a number of car accidents. So when it comes to interviewing, like if you say, hey, I've been having pain, I had a plate put in my knee, that type of thing. Then we go over the type of pain, how it's affecting them, are they able to mobilize? And then I would ask again, for a lot of these, they were renewals. So has this continued to help you? I would ask them about things that would indicate maybe drug-seeking behavior. You know, are you taking anything else to alleviate the pain? Have you gone to a physical therapist? And then I would give them a list of people or companies that they can go to if they wanted further help, because some of these cases did sound like lost causes where they weren't getting the help they need. And I knew, like I said, they could just go to the dispensary and get it if they wanted to. But I know also that the patients were trying to get their card and keep that maintained so that they can have that to even show their doctors, where a lot of their cases that this is actually working better. I don't want to be on opioids. I had a number of those patients were veterans, and that's what they preferred to use so that they wouldn't have to continue taking other pain meds.
You want to ask, what clinic do you work at for the certification?
It was the Arizona, medical marijuana certification. Let me see. I sent their name, address, and all of that. It's on Camelback Road. I have to pull that up too, but it's in the email correspondence and in the letter that I submitted ahead. So the Marijuana Evaluations AZ or Arizona, they go by either. They have a different DBA, but I sent all the information. Sometimes they have the MJ doc, but Marijuana Evaluations Arizona was the official name on the sign.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Cameron.
Okay. Thank you. Let me roll to Dr. Campbell real quick. I'd like to try to move through this page.
I concur with the physician members of the board. I just want to reiterate a couple of things that really may have really already been mentioned. Reference the state and worrying about, they're not telling me any of this. The department that you're sending the paper to, they're not the regulatory commission that is responsible for overseeing the your prescription transactions, and so they wouldn't, you know, necessarily catch that. It's two separate agencies that work under the state. And this whole situation, if you take everything else aside, and narrowly look at, it's just the form there that says that I am checking that CMC, and then you sign your name. And so when the prescription people pull up and see that, you know, you issued 275 cards, and the other state agency received 270 something pieces of paper from you that said that you did those PMPs, and then they look up the PMPs and it shows that you've done none, that's why they reported it. And, you know, you have to look at it from a standpoint of things falling through the cracks. A lot of times we don't necessarily see some of the prescriptions that veterans are getting on the PMP all the time, depending on what, you know, what area that they're getting their prescriptions from. And it's happened before where veterans that are pain patients have received their narcotics from the VA, and then they've gone to an outside doctor, and in other words, they're doubling up on their medication. And, you know, if another physician forgets to check the monitoring and he's prescribing a primary opioid breakthrough medication to the patient, and then that patient's seeing another doctor, perhaps for antidepressants, and something falls through the cracks there, then he comes to you, and, you know, and then you didn't do the PMP, you can quickly see how this patient could essentially be, you know, end up with this treasure trove of drugs. And I understand what you're saying from the standpoint of, well, you know, it's legal and they can get that anyway. But where the difference is the liability, because you're actually, you know, from the guy who goes and gets it on it by himself, you know, they have a little bit of extra privileges with that medical marijuana card. And, you know, but separate from that, you've actually basically given them given them that medication or the right to get that medication. And so then it becomes liability for yourself. And so there's so many other considerations that go into that we have to think about. And so that's all I have, Mr.
Chairman. Yeah. And you know, I'm sorry, me. What was the doctor?
That was Dr. Campbell. But I need to roll through my board members. I need to roll through this case. So let me go with Ms. Tibbetts for comments and suggestions. Tibbetts, you there?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Ms. Gallen?
I don't have any questions either.
Okay. Board members, so in summation, we've got basically three issues. One is failure to check the CSPMP. Two, no chart notes. And three, the patients, all 270 of them, were seen, well, not seen, actually. They were not even on any type of platform. They were just, you know, telephone calls. So we definitely need to come up with a motion on this. And I'll throw some items out that maybe you can take it from there. But one would be definitely a letter of concern. Two would be CME, probably at least in charting. And then at least 6 hours of continuing education on medical cannabis. And those are just a sketch idea, and I'll meet the board members to give you their feedback.
This is Dr. Lopio. I would agree with all those statements. I guess my concern is that, you know, certainly this seems like the most across the board WISP on following any sort of guidelines and protocols that we've had. So I don't know if it rises to a consent agreement for me, for sure, what you just said, Dr. Stadelick, across the board on CME's level of concern, et cetera. So I just don't know if it needs any more than that or if that's adequate at this point. I'd be curious what other board members have to say.
And I agree with what you're saying, Dr. Spath, your thought process based on the three things that you've pointed out and you've illustrated.
I agree with you regarding about some of the idea that you put out regarding the CME as well as medical records, because medical records is very important regardless if it's telemedicine or not. We still need some type of documentation regarding what's wrong with the patient. So I definitely would agree with additional CME as well on top of the 30 unit CME that we require by the state. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Campbell, your thoughts?
I believe this is the physician's first time before the board. I think in totality, I would recommend the charting I think it's appropriate to go non-disciplinary. Being that the third issue, with the pandemic coming into consideration, and the different, the fact that many of these were them coming back for a renewal. It just really quickly, ma'am, and if you can keep your response to, is there a difference between legally and when you, or actually, let's scratch that. I would just support a letter of concern with the CME above the 30 hours for charting.
Okay. And just so that I'm clear, are you're working at Southwest now, are you working, it sounds like, in the clinic. Are you charting on any of those patients you have contact with? Or are you not having
No, I have direct contact with patients, but I'm over the IV suite. So it's residents and students that I oversee. Now, I do, I just want this taken into consideration, too. I do review their chart notes. I don't chart on patients, because I'm just over that department. But I review my resident reviews before anything is signed and put up. I am typically, outside of this case, Jeff, this is my first offense. I am very adamant about how we do things, especially on the university campus. I'm at two different universities. And like I said, I accept the board's decision. It was poor on my end. I really wanted to say to Dr. Campbell, I understand everything you're saying. I just really wanted to say that if in the past we had someone delegating the PMP, I have gotten flagged, or that the board will send a message and say, hey, these things here from the pharmacy board, and then I'll go and look at it again. And because that's never happened with these patients, I also assume that everything was fine, they weren't speakers. And I did go back to look at those reports, the summation that I sent to Ms. Gale. I went and looked at those when I was importing their information, when they showed ready, I looked at them, and some of the scripts where they did have opioids in the past, it was just that there weren't any new medications that had been written within that period of certification. Thank you.
So we were, I was discussing just a moment ago with Dr. Popio, and he brings up some pretty valid points. We have no letter, actually no charts whatsoever, but minimum of letter of concern, 8 hours of charting CME, and then at least 6 hours of medical cannabis.
This is Dr. Popio. I'd be good with that, Dr. Stadler.
Okay. Okay.
Can I ask one question of the board?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, no, you have to. I wanted to ask one. Well, actually, two questions. The letter of concern, is that a permanent like bar against me, or how long would that last? I wanted to ask. And the second question. With the CMEs, which I am happy to accept that as a disciplinary action, with I hadn't worked in so long, that was part of the issue with just even looking for jobs to try to get myself back on my feet after hospitalizations and having a really severe case of COVID. I'm hoping within the time frame you give me, I can afford to get any if it's given to me to have to take 14 hours between the two groups of courses within that time on top of the other 30, if that's what you're saying. I don't know if it's on top of or along with, but that was my only concern, was just financial aspect.
So the answer to your question, the letter of concern, that would need to be directed to the executive director, Ms. Anthony, in terms of how that
okay. Sit
on your record.
Send an email.
Send her an email, and then she can respond. And in reference to the 14 hours, I'm fine, and I understand, and I'm sorry to hear about your health issues, with you taking up to 8 months to complete that. You could do that as part of your 30. However, you'd have to get your 30 comes up by December 31st. So you might want to check with the AZNMA to see if they offer. I know they offer one on charting, and see if they offer one on medical cannabis. And that could be part of your 30 hours. You still have to do the opioid portion, obviously. I would be okay
right. With
that.
Okay, so I'll email Gail for the details.
Email Gail for the details, and we're working on a motion right now, and we need to make sure with the other board members that this is working for them. So, Dr. Popio, let me get your viewpoint.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, and you know, I guess I would be fine with, you know, the CME being upwards of 6 months, even up to a year, to complete the additional ones. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But I think the letter of concern with the CME is reasonable at this point.
Okay. Dr. Spatt?
I agree with Mr. Buffalo as well.
Okay. And Dr. Campbell?
I concur.
Then let me ask Ms. Tippett if she has any viewpoints on it.
I'm in agreement.
Okay. Ms. Gallen?
I'm in agreement as well.
Okay. So the motion, I'll go ahead
and
make it.
Really quick, Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin. Just a couple recommendations before you make the motion. As I understand it, it's going to be a non-disciplinary letter of concern, as well as a non-disciplinary order for CE. When you're making the motion, you're going to want to specify what statutes you want to include in the letter of concern as potential violations. And thinking about the three areas that you had identified, I just wanted to point out what I think are probably the three most on-point statutes. There's obviously the one cited in the investigative report with regard to checking the CSPMP, that's subsection YY. There's also the failure to maintain adequate medical records, that's subsection V, also in the investigative report. And the only other one would be with regard to the physical examinations. That would, and I don't think that one's in the the investigative report, but it's subsection WW, prescribing, dispensing, or furnishing a prescription medication or prescription-only device to a person unless the licensee first conducts a physical examination or has previously established a doctor-patient relationship. It says the physical examination may be conducted during a real-time telemedicine encounter with audio and video capability. Is this?
But not for the purpose of medical marijuana.
Okay, never mind. My apologies, Mr. Chair members. Then it's just the two that Gail cited, the YY and V, in subsection YY and subsection V. My apologies. And with regard to the CME, just I wasn't quite clear on where you ended up on that, so just make sure your motion specifies exactly, you know, what areas and how many hours, whether they're included or not included, and how much time she has.
So we're looking at a non-disciplinary letter of concern with 8 hours of CME for medical charting, additional 6 hours for education on medical cannabis. I would make in this motion that she is allowed 6 months. She needs an extension due to fiscal reasons. She can discuss it with the executive director. And this could be part of her 30 hours. That might be less of a burden for the doctor. And these would fall under the following section, ARS-32-1501, section 31, YY, and V as in Victor. And that's my motion.
This is Dr. Popio. I second that motion.
Roll call.
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Board members, let's go ahead and roll through five, and then we can take a quick recess before we get to six. But let's roll on 5D as a dog, case number 22-225. And is Sarah Martin on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Review on this case.
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 22-225. This complaint came by way of a submitted complaint form to the board from a licensed naturopathic physician in Prescott Valley. On July 13, 2022, board staff received a complaint form relating to Sarah Martin, along with information she markets herself as a naturopathic physician. Internet search at large did discover www.effectuatehealing.com, where it is listed Sarah Martin, ND, has been studying alternative medicine since 2002. Dr. Martin utilizes alternative medicine and about Dr. Martin. Additionally, on the NPI database, her credentials, she lists herself as a naturopath. On July 13, 2022, Ms. Martin was notified of the complaint and asked to respond. Ms. Martin stated in her response she performs massage therapy with manipulation practices for pain management. Despite the use of the protected title in advertising on her website and that she categorizes herself as a naturopath under the NPI number, she stated, quote, "I do not claim to be a physician of naturopathy," end quote. Relating to her website, she stated she created the website in massage therapy school. Ms. Martin holds a massage therapy license in the state of Arizona and an initial issuance date of 1/28/2020. On her website, Ms. Martin refers to herself as Dr. ND and states she's been practicing since 2019. In review of her website, in total, it appears Ms. Martin is putting herself out to the public as a naturopathic physician.
And Sarah, your viewpoint?
Yes, that sounds 100% horrible. 100% I agree. So in 2018, I started massage therapy school. And one of our assignments is to go through our future. I own a business. And so because I owned a business, they said, I want to see where you're, you know, what is your future? My future is to become a naturopath physician. That is what I want. I am actively in school. I am on the National Honor Society for leadership. It's a dream. I've had since I was 16. So in massage therapy school, they said create a website. So I did, and that what I was looking at was calling, like sitting in class, create your business name. So we came up with a name. Effectuate means to create change. And it's a non-open business. Because it's just a name, but it's something that one day we want to open to the public, going, this is what we are. But in order to get there, I have to finish school. So I didn't think much about the website afterwards at all. I do not practice medicine. I do study, like, through Trinity School of Natural Health. Was one that I did attend, and I completed with traditional naturopath. The first time traditional naturopath, I went through the programs, I took the test, and I applied to the board. I sent an email. Oh my God, I have my traditional naturopath. What do I do to apply so that I can be board certified? With you guys, with your board. So this is the naivety that I did have. And I got a great email back that said, unfortunately, this is not a recognized school. But they gave me a list of names. So I contacted SCNM in Tempe and said, okay, great. What do I need to do so I can go to your school? And I submitted everything I've ever attended, literally since 2002. And they said, Sarah, some of this is great, but Trinity School of Medicine, the Ayurvedic Health Education School, that one's not counted. So a lot of the schools that I've attended online are not accredited. So I learned a lot through this process on attending accredited school. Jan at SCNM was extremely helpful, and we are going through Aspen University. I applied to the nursing program. I got in. Because the nursing program has been put on hold for cohorts due to some issues they're having with credentialing. They gave us options as a student to go ahead and pick other things to do. Do we want to move to another state to finish, or do we want to pick another program? I talked to Jan and let her know what was happening. And so she helped me pick the right program so that I can continue on this journey. I have 26 classes left of school, and then we're moving to Phoenix so I can go to school, so I can get my goal that was on a website. And I have immediately, as soon as I got that letter, we deleted everything off of the website and took it down. I had someone come and help me. My friend, for the NPI number, it is not listed for naturopathy or naturopath. Underneath my NPI, it's for massage. And the secondary is naturopath, but not that I'm a naturopath, but that I filled it out. I didn't have anyone help me, so I thought I was doing the right thing. One of my friends who does NPI numbers, like this is her job for doctors, she came in and she's like, let me take this over and help you. So we redid all of the paperwork so that way staff's taken care of the correct way. I even contacted Full Script because that is a company that for supplements, and I know that some of the physicians use them as well, but it's also for massage therapists and lay people like myself. and I am a lay practitioner. I have gone, you know, like I said, through Trinity. I did get board certified through Holistic Health Practitioner through the National Wellness Practitioner Board, and with LEAP, with them as well, with the DHA, which is the Guardian Ecclesiastic Health Association. Like, I am doing things like the right way, but in that website, I didn't look at it after we pretty much completed class. Instead, I had to focus on getting to my next goal and how do I do that. When I contacted FullScript, because next to, like, even on my massage therapy, where it says, you know, it says naturopath, I called them and I said, this is not okay. And they actually are changing it for every layperson in the whole company. And I was actually, like, I was kind of proud of that because of the insight that came from this whole thing, that I'm even able to make changes in how the other people are represented. I know naturopath is a word that I thought I could use in Arizona, being that I did complete school with a certificate that a traditional naturopath, not a naturopathic physician, but a traditional naturopath. My goal is to become an MMD, and I'm an A student. I get 100%, so I can get to my goal. And if it wasn't for massage therapy school, I would have never finished completing that goal. And I went to massage school because I own a business and my massage therapist kept quitting. And I'm like, I can't keep telling my clients, like, you know, I couldn't perform the service. So I went to school to learn the service so I could help. And because I do work, I'm a hairstylist and I work so hard at what I do, my body hurts. So when it comes to chronic pain, I'm not talking about chronic pain in the sense of, like, bone structure, but the muscle fatigue, the sore feet, like, just your body hurting because you're in constant motion. And through the Board of Massage Therapy, it is approved. I can absolutely work on people, even in chronic pain, with massage manipulation governed under my license.
Okay, Sarah, let me interrupt you because I have a meeting. I've got to get, and I've got board members that are generous enough to give their time. The problem is you have on your site that you're a naturopath, that you're treating, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do that. So I'm gonna make a motion and then to the board members, but that you get 30 days to expunge all this off of the internet. You may have to pay somebody, but you get that off the internet until you go through and do what is necessary to get that certification, license, whatever.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
So I need to move this. So let me ask Dr. Popia what his thoughts are.
No, that's fair. I think, like she said, she's already done that, but, you know, we'll just have the executive director keep following up on that. And, you know, I definitely think that's appropriate. And so good luck in your journey to becoming a licensed naturopath.
Thank you.
Dr. Spatz?
I don't have anything to add.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Campbell?
Nothing else to add.
Ms. Tibbetts?
No questions.
Okay. And Ms. Gallen?
Nothing at this time either.
Okay. So the executive director will just follow up and make sure that within 30 days, it sounds like you've always done it.
So, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I think there was a motion on the table. If I understand, and just correct me if I'm wrong, the motion is to continue this case for 30 days in order to allow Ms. Martin to remove all of the references to naturopathic medicine, et cetera, so forth, on the websites. And after 30 days, you know, Gail will follow up and review and we'll, you know, take this case back up at the next board meeting. Is that my understanding?
Yes.
Okay. And so it'll need a second and a roll call.
Dr. Popiano, I'll take that motion.
And roll call, please. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Would you like to explain your vote?
I just said aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said nay.
Me too.
Ms. Gallen?
Sorry. Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, it is right now 2:12. Let's go ahead and take a quick 5-minute break. We'll meet back here at 2:20. And I'll make a motion for that. Do I have a second?
Just start for that second, I'm okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
In a few moments.